Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, April 2nd, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page that's a photo spread. It's headlined Outdoors, Signs of Spring. All photos are attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first shows a young girl balancing on a piece of playground apparatus and is captioned, Reagan Barnhill celebrates her fourth birthday by playing on the playground at Fairview Park in Decatur on Tuesday. Dandelion and henbit flowers bloom in the grass at Fairview Park in Decatur on Tuesday. The next photo is captioned, Landon Dickey, 12, prepares a pole for fishing at Dreamland Lake in Fairview Park in Decatur on Tuesday. And the final photo shows five tulips and one bud. Three are yellow, two are red, and the bud is red. The caption reads, "Tulips emerge in a garden on the west side of Decatur on Tuesday." Supreme Court. Justices take up birthright citizenship. First sitting president attends oral arguments in nation's high court. By Mark Sherman, Associated Press, Washington. The Supreme Court took up one of the term's most consequential cases, President Donald Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship, declaring that children born to parents who are in the United States illegally or temporarily, are not American citizens, and he was in the courtroom on Wednesday for some of the arguments. The justices heard Trump's appeal of a lower court ruling from New Hampshire that struck down the citizenship restrictions, one of several courts that have blocked them. They haven't taken effect anywhere in the country. Trump is the first sitting president to attend oral arguments at the nation's highest court. He spent just over an hour inside the courtroom, hearing arguments by the government's lawyer, Solicitor General D. John Sauer. He left shortly after Sauer wrapped up and the plaintiff was invited to present her case. The case frames another test of Trump's assertions of executive power that defy long-standing precedent for a court that largely rules in the president's favor, but with some notable exceptions that Trump responded to, with starkly personal criticisms of the justices. A definitive ruling is expected by early summer. The birthright citizenship order, which Trump signed the first day of his second term, is part of his Republican administration's broad immigration crackdown. Birthright citizenship is the first Trump immigration-related policy to reach the court for a final ruling. The justices previously struck down global tariffs Trump imposed under an emergency powers law that was never used that way. Trump reacted furiously to the late February tariffs decision, saying he was ashamed of the justices who ruled against him and calling them unpatriotic. He issued a preemptive broadside against the court on Sunday on his Truth Social platform. Birthright citizenship is not about rich people from China and the rest of the world who want their children and hundreds of thousands more for pay, that's in caps, to ridiculously become citizens of the United States of America. It is about the babies of slaves, that's all in caps, the president wrote. Dumb judges and justices will not a great country make. On December 10th, 2025, Trump announced his long-promised gold card officially went on sale, offering legal status and an eventual pathway to U.S. citizenship for individuals paying $1 million and corporations ponying up twice that per foreign-born employee. Trump's order would upend the long-standing view that the Constitution's 14th Amendment, ratified in 1868, And federal law, since 1940, confers citizenship on everyone born on American soil, with narrow exceptions for the children of foreign diplomats and those born to a foreign occupying force. The 14th Amendment was intended to ensure that Black people, including former slaves, had citizenship, though the citizenship clause is written more broadly. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, it reads. In a series of decisions, lower courts struck down the executive order as illegal, or likely so, under the Constitution and federal law. The decisions invoked the High Court's 1898 ruling in Wong Kim Ark, which held that the U.S.-born child of Chinese nationals was a citizen. The Trump administration argues that the common view of citizenship is wrong, asserting that children of non-citizens are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States and therefore are not entitled to citizenship. The court should use the case to set straight long-enduring misconceptions about the Constitution's meaning, wrote Sauer, the Solicitor General. No court accepted that argument, and lawyers for pregnant women whose children would be affected by the order said the Supreme Court should not be the first to do so. We have the President of the United States trying to radically reinterpret the definition of American citizenship, said Cecilia Wang, the American Civil Liberties Union legal director, facing off against Sauer at the Supreme Court. More than 250,000 babies born in the U.S. each year would be affected by the executive order, according to research by the Migration Policy Institute and Pennsylvania State University's Population Research Institute. While Trump largely focused on illegal immigration in his rhetoric and actions, the birthright restrictions also would apply to people who are legally in the United States, including students and applicants for green cards or permanent resident status. Housing. Buy America Law Bogs Down Construction, by Charlotte Crayman, Associated Press, Report for America. It has a catchy name, Build America, Buy America, and the goal of bringing manufacturing jobs back to the United States. But the law has spurred a bottleneck for affordable housing. Nearly everything from HVACs and lighting to sink hooks and ceiling fans in affordable housing projects that get federal dollars must carry the Made in the USA label. But, developers say, numerous products do not, as they have long been imported from overseas markets with cheaper labor costs. Although builders can apply for waivers, the process has been at a near standstill, as the Department of Housing and Urban Development has only greenlit a handful of projects. The waiver process has caused construction delays and hundreds of thousands of dollars in extra costs, as the country faces an affordable housing crisis. They need to be treating this like the fire that it is, said Tyler Norod, president of Westbrook Development Corporation, which builds affordable housing in Maine. We've sort of resigned ourselves that we're just going to build less units across the entire country during a housing crisis. Diana Lean has been on affordable housing wait list for the past 5 years. The 75-year-old loves living close to her daughter and grandchildren in Fargo, North Dakota, but her apartment is too expensive on her Social Security income. To save money, she avoids driving often and buys food on sale. I'm just trying to keep a roof over my head, but it's getting more and more difficult, Lean said. Lean is on a wait list for one of nonprofit developer Beyond Shelter's apartments. CEO Dan Madler is building a 36-unit building for people like Lean, but he had to postpone lumber orders to verify that they comply with the law, and he can't find ceiling fans made in America. He doesn't know when HUD will approve a waiver. President Joe Biden signed the Build America, Buy America Act as part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act in 2021. Known as BABA, it applies to infrastructure projects funded by federal agencies, not just affordable housing. Denver developer Julie Hobel said she has spent over $60,000 just on a consultant to comb through websites and call suppliers to try to find American-made materials, not to mention the additional labor costs involved. The waiver she submitted to HUD in November for around 125 materials in an 85-unit building haven't been approved. HUD is taking at least 6 months to approve many waivers. Even BABA advocates agree HUD must grant waivers more quickly and give the industry clearer instructions on how to prepare them. HUD did not address questions from the Associated Press about waiver approval, delays developers say increase costs, or concerns about making the process more transparent. In a statement, it said it's committed to ensuring that federal spending supports America's industrial base while closely monitoring how compliance with these policies impact costs for builders. Asked in January about whether the delays and cost increases mean affordable housing should be exempt from BABA rules, HUD Secretary Scott Turner said the agency was looking into the issue, but did not provide details. The law itself isn't the problem, supporters say. Unions representing the steel and manufacturing industries say taxpayer dollars should fund American-made materials, and suppliers will adjust to meet demand for products that aren't available. You've got a system in place that leans heavily on using imported materials to make a better profit, said Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I don't know if that serves the public good. Jennifer Schwartz, Director of Tax and Housing Advocacy at the National Council of State Housing Agencies, said there's no national data on how much BABA is increasing costs. But the waiver process is failing, she said, because requirements were put in place before assessment of domestic manufacturing capacity. It won't be as challenging for suppliers to produce more raw materials in the U.S., but it will take time for manufactured products, such as appliances and elevators, to become available, said Caitlin Snyder, managing director of the National Housing and Rehabilitation Association. I don't know that it economically, financially, makes sense for people to be producing door hinges, Snyder said. We are an advanced country, and we've outsourced a lot of that stuff. The housing bill that passed the Senate in March did not require HUD to address problems with implementing BABA. Vermont-based developer Jessica Neubelt estimates she spent an additional $150,000 just to verify iron and steel she used in a project was American-made. She's just as frustrated over the hundreds of hours that takes, which she said could be spent on other projects. U.S. Representative Mike Flood, a Nebraska Republican, has advocated to exempt some HUD funding from BABA. Owning a home is the American dream, but it's out of reach in a very big way, and anything that adds cost to that isn't allowing hardworking Americans to achieve the dream, Flood told the AP. The law does offer some leeway. Developers can get exemptions for an American-made product if it increases the project's overall cost by more than 25%. A very small percentage of a project's total material cost is also exempt. But most developers say that percentage isn't enough to cover all items not made in the U.S. Some developers are looking for ways to avoid federal funds altogether, but that is challenging. Even though federal dollars often make up a small portion of funding for affordable housing projects, that sliver can make or break whether there's enough money to build them. Kentucky developer Scott McReynolds says that instead of applying for a federal grant to build 20 to 30 affordable homes, he plans to build 2 4-unit projects, small enough that they aren't subject to BABA. American-made materials are especially hard to find near the rural areas McReynolds serves. It's a nightmare, he said. Forsyth. Men face charges in AMC burglary. Police say Decatur duo stealing copper and other materials. By Danette Beckett. Forsyth. Two Decatur men were arrested while they were in the process of burglarizing the former AMC Classic Hickory Point 12 in Forsyth, authorities said. According to a news release issued by Macon County Sheriff's Department, Lieutenant S.E. Flannery, deputies were contacted at approximately 11:50 p.m. Monday to the report of a burglary in progress. Multiple deputies and a canine officer responded and secured the perimeter after seeing signs of forced entry into the abandoned building, the release stated. When deputies entered the building, they discovered two men inside who were in the process of stealing copper pipes, electrical wiring and breaker boxes, and other building material. Michael Large, 43, and Kelsey Sandage, 40, were apprehended without incident on preliminary charges of criminal damage to property over $100,000, burglary, and possession of burglary tools. According to the release, both men admitted they had entered the former theater on at least four occasions during the past weeks. Damage to the theater was discovered last week. Deputies working in the Forsyth area were prepared for the latest entry in the building, the release stated. Large and Sandage were taken to the Macon County Jail, where they were eventually released with a notice to appear on April 14th. The owners announced the permanent closure of the theater in December 2020. Efforts by another theater group to reopen the business in 2022 were unsuccessful. Correctional officer faces DUI charge. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. A Macon County Sheriff's Office correctional officer was arrested Tuesday by Decatur police on preliminary charges of driving under the influence of alcohol, resisting or obstructing a peace officer, and aggravated battery to a peace officer. According to a news release issued by Macon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Scott Flannery, James A. Davis, 46, was taken into custody at approximately 11:50 p.m. Tuesday at a convenience store on West El Dorado Street. Davis was transported to the Macon County Jail, where he was processed and released with a notice to appear. The report stated his court date is set for April 14th. Davis has been employed as a correctional officer since October 2000. He is currently on administrative leave pending the outcome of an internal investigation and the criminal proceedings. Statehouse. Warehouse pollution reduction bill stalls. Trucking emissions spark asthma concerns. By Gabriel Matias Castillo. Medill, Illinois News Bureau. Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A proposal that would have created the first statewide regulations aimed at curbing pollution generated by fulfillment centers, parcel hubs, and sorting facilities failed to receive a committee vote in either chamber of the General Assembly. Illinois hosts more than 2,400 warehouses, and about 2 million people live within half a mile of one, according to the nonprofit Environmental Defense Fund Advocacy Group. Among the main distribution centers within the state are ones operated by Amazon, Walmart, and IKEA, whose trucks use the interstate highway system and the nearby roads to deliver their products. Senate Bill 3732 and its companion House Bill 5600, both titled the Warehouse Pollution Reduction Act, would have established annual emissions reduction targets and a system of points for air pollution mitigation measures for those facilities and the trucks traveling to and from them. But both the House and Senate declined to even bring the measures for a committee vote, making their passage in this year's General Assembly unlikely. We hope all your bills pass, said Senate sponsor Rachel Ventura, Democrat Joliet. If I didn't think it had a chance at all to pass, I wouldn't have filed the bill. I think this is going to be a longer conversation. Warehouse pollution. The bill would have held warehouses responsible for the pollution generated by the trucks that use the facility by establishing a system of fees whose value would depend on the cost of enforcing the new rules. The fee would be deposited in a warehouse pollution management fund created by the bill to provide for its implementation and proper regulation. That truck pollution, especially the diesel particulate matter, has caused a lot of asthma in our area, Ventura said. We give them the option of how they want to mitigate that. So, for some companies, it probably makes a lot more sense for them to upgrade their fleet, Ventura added. Maybe they don't want to do anything with their fleet. Maybe they decide, you know what, financially, we want to pay into the fund and allow somebody else to clean up the air. Ventura said her bill is modeled after Southern California's warehouse indirect source rule, implemented in 2021 to address the South Coast region's air quality problems. Ventura's district, according to the Environmental Defense Fund, has the highest number of warehouses in the state. Senator Seth Lewis, Republican Bartlett, whose district has the fourth most warehouses, said he is concerned this will take away local control over how each municipality will manage its warehouses. She's trying to destroy the local economy by imposing overburdensome regulations on a successful industry, Lewis said. She's welcome to do that in her own community, but when she wants it in my community, she's going to get a fight, not only from me, but from all the mayors. Matthew Hart, executive director of the Illinois Movers and Warehousemen's Association, said he has not yet seen any benefit for consumers in the bill. He said the association, along with the Illinois Trucking Association, where he also serves as the executive director, is keeping a close eye and is in talks with the sponsors of the bill. We want to make sure that we protect the businesses that are here, that are serving our customers here, Hart said. It becomes more expensive if you force us to deliver stuff from warehouses that are further away, who don't have to comply with all these extra stringent regulations. Both Hart and Lewis warned that imposing new regulations on the warehouses might drive those businesses to neighboring states. For some reason, many of my colleagues believe that we can isolate Illinois and people will want to do business here. And the answer is, they don't, Lewis said. They will figure out a way in which to not invest in Illinois and invest in other states. While 92% of the leased warehouses with over 100,000 square feet are concentrated in the Chicago area and surrounding counties, the warehouses in Peoria, Decatur, Bloomington, Champaign, and Lincoln would also be subject to the bill. According to the Environmental Defense Fund study, none of the facilities in those cities had air pollution monitors, which would be required under the bill. Looking forward, the bill has no bipartisan support at this point. Republican opponents like Senator Andrew Chesney, Republican Freeport, said this bill was a hard no for him and that he suspects most Republicans would oppose it. It's a job killer bill, he said. We need to look at deregulating Illinois and putting it in a position where all types of industries want to flourish and want to come and grow. Ventura said the bill fits in line with Illinois' recent environmental priorities. The truth of it is that we do need companies to make sure they're being fair and appropriate partners in our communities, she said. And right now, we have a whole industry that's not. Gabriel Castillo is a graduate student in journalism with Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, Media, and Integrated Marketing Communications, and is a fellow in its Medill, Illinois News Bureau, working in partnership with Capital News Illinois. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Financial Markets Analysis, Trump's Sway Over Markets Waning, by Josh Boak and Fatima Hussein, Associated Press, Washington. As the Iran war intensifies, President Donald Trump has prioritized efforts to calm the financial markets, trying to keep oil prices from exploding upward, stocks from cratering, and interest rates from surging. When the markets have flashed danger, Trump has been quick with a social media post or a remark to claim the war he launched last month could soon end. He's publicly declared that the markets are doing better than he expected, even with the S&P 500 stock index declining over the past 5 weeks and the global oil benchmark up roughly 60%. "I thought oil prices were going to go up higher than they are now," Trump said at a Friday investor summit. "And I thought that we would see a bigger drop in stock. It hasn't been that bad." With the Iran war, the White House has largely refrained from messaging more aggressively to voters about the economic consequences, choosing instead to try to contain damage in the financial markets, which have swung wildly on the prospects of ceasefire or escalation in what has become a high-stakes guessing game about Trump's next moves. The Republican president showed the extremes of his messaging Monday before the U.S. stock market opened, writing in a social media post that great progress had been achieved on peace talks with Iran, while also threatening civilian infrastructure, such as desalinization plants, if a deal wasn't reached shortly. The White House sees the stock, energy, and bond markets as a way to indirectly reach voters. Trump has staked his economic agenda on cheap prices at the pump, robust gains in 401k accounts, and cheaper mortgage rates. But that messaging appears to be wearing thin, as the president's various pronouncements have done little to change the reality that a large chunk of the world's energy supply is stranded by the conflict. Just 38% of U.S. adults approve of how he's handling the economy, and only 35% support him on Iran, according to a March survey by the Associated Press, NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research. Gene Sperling, a top economic advisor in the Democratic Clinton, Obama, and Biden administrations, said voters can make a direct connection between prices at the pump and Trump's choice to attack Iran. He said simplistic jawboning to the markets is insufficient for a public that is stuck paying the price as gasoline soars past $4 a gallon nationwide. Most advisors would say the president has to speak directly to the American people and fully acknowledge the economic pain that his policy has so directly caused in a short amount of time, and make the case for why the national security concerns justify it, Sperling said. Instead, you have a strategy of not recognizing or even dismissing people's economic pain. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt on Monday called the oil price increases a short-term fluctuation. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, April 2nd, 2026. Please stay tuned.